At one time, medical researchers conducted their studies only on men. That started changing more than 20 years ago, and now the National Institutes of Health says more than half of human research subjects are women. But when it comes to research on animals or even cells, most continues to be done on males. Janine Clayton wants to change that. She's the Associate Director for Research on Women's Health at NIH, and she joins us now to explain a new research policy. Janine, good morning.
Good morning.
So first of all, just explain why it's important to use both females and males in research that is done on animals or even cells.
It's critically important to use both female and male animals and cells when you're doing preclinical research. And that's research that's looking at to determine whether a drug or a procedure or treatment is likely to be helpful for humans. And because we're studying diseases that affect both men and women, it's really important in that preclinical space, which informs and tells us how to do the next steps in our clinical studies, to include both male and female animal cells and tissues.
So what have we learned over the past 20 years since you initiated the policy of raising the number of women in these studies? Say out of 100 diseases, how many affect men and women differently?
There's certainly many, many conditions that affect men and women differently. And while I can't say on a standard 100 how many there are, what I can say is that actually when you look at biologic processes and physiology, how men and women's bodies work, how the cells in our lungs and our tissues and our the liver and other tissues are different, because every single sex in your body has – every single cell in your body has a sex. So, and that's either male or female sex if you're a man or a woman. So what we've learned from the research that we've done is that diseases like depression, for example, which is a leading cause of disability worldwide, shows up differently in men and women. Women tend to have a more withdrawn, kind of reticent pattern of depression, and men can have a more of an angry pattern of depression. And why that's important is because the clinicians who treat patients need to know that, so that they would recognize both the man and the woman as being depressed, and both men and women would get treated appropriately. Conditions like smoking can be affected as well. So nicotine patches and gum don't work quite as well in women as they do in men. So a clinician treating a woman who's trying to quit smoking, which is a fantastic thing, may understand that and know that she needs to add different therapies to that treatment regimen to be more effective for a woman.
So, and this might seem like, well, it is indeed biology 101, but the idea that cells themselves have a gender, they're either male or female, I mean, that's something that most of us don't think about every day. So I'm just wondering, if you incorporate that aspect into the beginning of research, what can that lead the scientists to do? Do you think, for example, they'd be studying different things, or they would be conducting the same studies but perhaps in a different way?
Sure, great point. Looking for differences between males and females, again, as you said, is not something people think about every day. In fact, in biomedical research, it really is like a blind spot. People did probably not intentionally not look at this, but unfortunately that left gaps in our knowledge. The good news is we can fill those gaps by addressing sex as a fundamental variable in biomedical research from the very start. And what that will do is researchers will think about that when they're designing their experiments, when they're collecting their data. They should report it by sex when they publish that information, which is a key step here. In order to get the information out about what research results are obtained, that research needs to be published. And so we're going to really need to be partnering with all the stakeholders in this space, especially our publishing colleagues. We know that sex matters, and NIH is taking action on this on multiple fronts. We're going to be developing training modules. We'll be addressing this issue through new policies that we'll be starting to roll out in next fiscal year, and we'll be continuing to support research that we currently support through an administrative supplement program where we add funding to existing grants to allow people to add additional animals or subjects in studies so that they can expand their ability to look at male-female differences.
So will this become a requirement for new research grants from NIH, that equal numbers, or what will you ask grantees to do differently?
This is really really more than a numbers game. So what we're asking in the future is to have researchers demonstrate a balanced approach in addressing males and females in differences in cells and animals. And the reason why we're doing that is to make sure that men and women can get the full benefit of medical research. So we're calling on scientists to take sex into account in their plans for preclinical research. And going forward, you know, this is kind of like an update to an operating system. You know, all of us have our smartphones and our computers, and when we get an update, you know, that fixes bugs, it addresses issues, you know, we get into that new mode and we don't even notice that it's a new update. So this is an opportunity to enhance our performance, to remedy gaps that we have, and it's really like an update to our research operating system. Current grants are not going to be affected by this, and as I mentioned, these policies will come out in a phased approach so that we're being thoughtful about this, and we want to make sure that folks in the scientific community know what we're expecting starting next fiscal year. And so it'll be very clear, but it doesn't affect grants right now.
We're speaking with Janine Clayton, and she is the NIH Associate Director for Research on Women's Health. Do NIH's own researchers already do this?
NIH's own researchers, you mean intramural researchers at the NIH and the clinical center? Is that what you mean?
Yes.
Absolutely. So I think this is an issue for the scientific community at large. And as I mentioned, you know, people just didn't think about it. So there are examples of NIH-supported research where we are actually doing this. The National Institute on Aging supports a program where they look at potential therapies that could be used to expand life and to improve quality of life, and that's an animal study. And they require that both male and female animals be used in that program. So we have some examples, and in fact, ORWH, the Office of Research and Women's Health, and our colleagues at NIH are supporting specialized centers on sex differences research right now, where this is actually done. We perform basic clinical and translational research in those centers. There are 11 of them around the country, and so they're doing this right now. We're also hoping to learn from those centers that have been in existence for over 10 years how to do this, and we're hoping to share that information as we move forward and develop a variety of ways to disseminate and share best practices and lessons learned.
Yeah, because I was going to ask, with that research where this is already being done, does the theory that, in fact, things are so different for men and women, has it been shown through those studies that NIH is now doing?
Absolutely. There are scientists who have been working on this, and we've been supporting that work. And there is a body of work in the scientific literature that shows these sex differences at a cellular level, basic biochemical differences. For example, the way that nerve cells may undergo a process called apoptosis or cell death can be different in female and male nerve cells. And we know that nerve cells and nerve cell death or neuron death is a component of many neurological diseases. And so that's a great example of how something that we see in the laboratory might have clinical importance. Again, and that's why this is so very important. By asking researchers to take sex into account, what we're doing is continuing to try to deliver the kind of rigorous science that drives the medical advances that we need.
And I guess some things we've learned in the past 20 years is that diseases thought only to be exclusive to men can affect women and vice versa. And so even though we're talking preclinical testing, can you see the time where perhaps researchers might have to say they're using mice for some type of research when they would have to do separate experiments for, you know, Mickey and Minnie?
Great question. I think there are going to be a wide variety of strategies that scientists can use to address sex, to take this into consideration in the context of their particular experiment, their particular scientific question. They are in a great position to think about, well, would there be a difference in my data if there were male or female animal cells or tissues? Is that going to make a difference? That is actually going to lead to new discoveries about basic biology that can benefit both women and men. Great point that you made regarding men and women. For example, women are much more affected by osteoporosis than men, a degenerative loss of bone over time. We want those men to be diagnosed as well, so we can learn from the fact that men and women are different.
And how is NIH planning to monitor compliance with the new policies as you roll them out?
As with any change, we are going to be able to look at what we're doing, carefully evaluate that, and make our steps in a iterative fashion so that we can address this most appropriately. So we'll begin with the training. We will begin rolling out the new policies, and we will be, during that process in parallel, designing changes as appropriate in review and compliance and oversight so that we make sure this is done. Because clearly it hasn't been done, and the status quo really wasn't getting us where we needed to go. This unisex approach to science really wasn't helping us move forward so that we could get the most benefit to both men and women, boys and girls, because all of us expect and deserve personalized medical attention when we have a condition. And as a physician, I want to be able to give the most data-based, evidence-informed treatment to my patients, individualized and tailored to their specific needs. And I definitely want to give a treatment that's appropriate and safe for both my men and women patients.
All right. Janine Clayton is the Associate Director for Research on Women's Health at NIH. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.